Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are back for another week, another conversation, another rant. Shan, do you have your rant ready for today?
You know me, full of rants. Let's go now. So, I'm actually always ranting on the podcast, am I?
You are always ranting.
Okay, I'm sorry guys. This is my time of the week to have an outlet, to have a safe space, okay, to vent. This is my audio diary, okay? So I need you guys to stick with me. So I was just thinking today about the fact that I got my carpet cleaned the other day, yeah?
Nice.
And this man, I got a letter put through my letterbox, like, oh, local guy, and I thought, yeah, let me support a local business. Probably not black, but let's support it. Hurrah. And the man came over to do the carpets. And whilst here, he seemed like a lovely bloke, by the way, just as a disclaimer. Let me do a fair story, an accurate story, a balanced story. He seemed like a lovely bloke. But as part of his time here, he kept referencing Africans, okay? Every conversation we had, somehow there was a need to mention Africans. He's worked with Africans, this with Africans, that with Africans. Anyway, I have quite a lot of suitcases in my house that are out. So in my room, I have a big suitcase, a medium suitcase and a small one. And then when he was here, because obviously I wanted to clear my floor, right? Those suitcases were in the living room. And then there's a suitcase in the living room that I'm giving to my brother. So okay. The guy goes to me, oh, something I've learned doing my job over the years. Africans love to have suitcases in their houses. They love it. What? They love having suitcases. It's because they're always going back home. I said, this is me. I said, oh, okay. He goes, yeah, that's why you got a suitcase, isn't it? Because that's what you lot do. You're just always going back home. Now, as a disclaimer for people listening that don't know me yet, I have no issue being called African. I randomly throw in African twang when I'm ready. I tell people I'm Ghanaian on nights out. Like, I'm not one of those people that are like, I'm Caribbean, I'm African. Although I'm very proudly to be Caribbean, but I definitely look at us all as one from my standpoint, yeah. But for the purpose of this being a white person, I was highly offended. So when he's going on and on and on, I'm like to him, oh, well, I don't know, because I'm not African. then he's like, you're what? I'm like, I'm not African. And he's like, so where are you from? I said, my family's Caribbean. And he goes, oh, sorry, didn't mean to offend you by calling you African if you're Caribbean. And I said, no, I'm not offended, but it's just the same as me calling you African when you're British. And then he goes, yeah. Oh, never thought of it like that. You know what? You're right. You're not African. You're Caribbean. And I just thought, fucking hell. this guy really had the audacity to come into my house. And I'm promising you, up until this point, he had made so many African references that had gone over my head. I thought he was just trying to, you know, be relatable, say these things. And I just thought, yeah, yeah, yeah. But you see the suitcases, that was the final straw. At that point, I said, sir, we're going to stop because you have no idea why I've got suitcases here.
I mean, I just have a question because, you know, I don't have any white friends.
Right.
Do people not have suitcases in their homes?
I think his point was that there was like so many. Because from my bedroom, four had come out, which to be honest, for a bedroom is like a lot. But it was because I've just come back from Jamaica. I'd just come back from a holiday not before that. I'm giving suitcases away that are new. It was just that there was a lot. So I don't think he meant that there were suitcases in the household. I think he was more referencing to like, there's just suitcases about the house. But I've never gone to a friend's house who's Black or Caribbean or Black African and noticed an array of suitcases. So I don't know where this came from, like a weird stereotype. But I also just thought, even if you have observed this, why do you think this is something to share with me or to let me know?
And why do you think it's something that's specifically associated with African people?
Or going back home. Maybe I'm well-traveled, actually.
Yeah. Maybe I just like to travel as a hobby. Like, maybe I'm just interested in seeing new places. Why is it the assumption that you're going back home? Which, So many issues with that.
But it made me think about the idea around microaggressions. Yeah. And obviously, we briefly said to each other today, let's talk about what it's like being Black and in the workplace and our routes to success and things like that. And microaggressions in the workplace is something I experienced a lot, particularly in the early part of my career. So I wanted to ask you, like, what's a microaggression that stands out in your experience, if any, when it comes to the workplace?
It's funny, recently, and I don't know if many people class this as a microaggression, but I definitely thought that it was. We were on a call and it's three white women on a call and everybody had washed their hair because I guess white people wash their hair every day, or a lot of people wash their hair every day. And so my hair was obviously not washed because I don't wash my hair every day. And so everybody got on this call and was like, oh, your hair is washed. Your hair is washed. Everybody looks like...
How could they tell?
That my hair wasn't washed.
No, that theirs were all washed. Was it like in...
They hadn't blow dried. Like it was an early morning.
Okay.
Everybody's hair was wet and like... I don't want to use any derogatory descriptions, but everybody's hair was wet. And so... they were all commenting about the fact that they all had washed their hair this morning and hadn't gotten a chance to blow dry or whatever. And they were like, clearly Leanne didn't get the memo. Like, she doesn't wash her hair every day. And I was like, actually, I don't because I'm Black.
Did you say that on the call?
I was like, it would strip my hair of oil. I was like, I can't afford to wash my hair every day because it's not good for my hair. Probably not good for theirs either, but who am I to say?
Leanne, on the call, they said to you, Livo, Leanne didn't get the memo, and your response was, it's because I'm Black.
Yeah, I was just like, I don't know any Black woman who washes their hair every day. Their hair would be dry as fuck.
What did they say back to that?
They were like, oh, the person, nobody said anything except for the woman who actually made the joke. And she was like, oh, I didn't know that. Sorry. And I was like, yeah, it's no big deal. But like, obviously there is a distinction between your hair and mine. And my hair doesn't require, nor does it, would it benefit from me washing it every day.
Yeah. Nah, that's so awkward. I feel like in those scenarios with like facing microaggressions, it's one of those ones where, until recently, I didn't really know how to handle it in the best way that is like pleasant to both my own experience and the person that I'm talking to. Because for some people, it is ignorance. Like for some people, I don't think they necessarily have ill intent, right? So you want to kind of educate the person in a way that's not exhausting for yourself, but also in a way that allows them to know, don't fucking ask me this again or say this again.
There are many microaggressions like the one that I just mentioned where I don't mind educating someone. But when there is like a built-in assumption, whether it's ignorant or whether it's like flat out racism, that undermines my capacity to do something or, you know, makes me, they're treating me as the exception rather than the norm, I think that's when I don't care about making people feel comfortable. Like if you're making me feel uncomfortable and you're actually undermining my skill set or my capacity or my deservingness of being here, of being in this space, I get really annoyed. Because sharing my fun fact for the day, you know, I think there is this misconception that like the reason that Black women aren't at the top of the ladder is because they're not professional enough, whether it's about our hair or about our way of working. But actually, the fact for today is that Black women, by and large, actually work harder and are more successful than their white counterparts. So more than, and I think this came from Forbes, just in case anybody's looking for the resource, but more than 50% of Black women between the ages of 18 to 24 are in the process of pursuing higher education. And the number of businesses started by African American women between 1997 and 2013, it grew by more than 250%. So Black women are on their hustle, they are succeeding, they are doing well, in spite of the fact that they are faced with microaggressions in the workplace, they don't have the support mechanisms, they don't have the opportunity. They're actually creating opportunities for themselves. And so when I walk into a room and somebody says something like, oh, you're the only Black person I know with a doctorate, or, you know, you're too good looking to be a doctor, which I find very strange and random, like only Black ugly woman can be smart. It's like, I don't know where that came from. It's like, you can't be good looking and attractive and you're Black.
You have to have one. Yeah.
You can't have everything. That pisses me off. And then I don't care about how to handle it. I'm just going to handle it in a way that feels reactive to me.
I think it's interesting that the data shows that there's an influx in women climbing the ladder, not necessarily being at the top, but like making new businesses and so forth. When you look at social media, there's a lot of conversation right now about the kind of reverse of that, of like women wanting to have a soft life and not wanting to work and wanting to be a lady of leisure and kind of wanting to, you know, redact that hustle culture they had before. So like when it comes to the word hustle culture or the idea of hustle culture, which for me, I look at now very similar to or adjacent to the idea of like working so hard that you're basically at burnout. That's what it sounds like to me. What's the perception like for you?
I think it's both. So for me, I genuinely, and as many of us do, right? We know so many of the women in our community who are starting new businesses while they're working their 9 to 5. And I think it's because that hustle culture allows us to pursue our dreams outside of like the 9 to 5, being on the what do you call it? The wheel.
The hamster wheel.
Being on the hamster wheel of just working for somebody else and actually bringing joy to our own lives by the work that we're doing. I think the unfortunate thing is, and this goes back to kind of dynamics between men and women, is that I often feel like I'm alone in that struggle, or that hustle, particularly by a lot of men, whether Black or white, is resented. So men are actually doing, at least within the Black community, are not doing as well as women are, right? Like there are more Black women that are going to university than Black men. There are more Black women that are, you know, climbing the ladder, even though we're still down. And a lot of that is being seen as women wanting to become men.
Or like be masculine, yeah.
Or be masculine. I want that soft life, but I also want to be successful. And I don't necessarily have the option, even though if I had the option, I don't know that I'd take it. But I actually don't necessarily have the option of depending on a man to give me that soft life.
Yeah.
I don't. The pickings are slim. And I think everybody would agree with that. So
There was a conversation on Twitter around a similar thing the other day. I can't remember the tweet verbatim, but the guy was basically saying like, you know, there's so many women getting on the housing ladder now and buying their own houses, but it's because when they go in clubbing, they're wearing £3 Pretty Little Thing dresses and they're not buying their own drinks. They're getting men to buy it for them. And there was lots of women responding back, like, you're such a bitter Betty, like, you're such an angry person, because that's absolutely not the reason why this is the case. And actually, if you wanted to be a man that could buy a girl a drink and also save for a house, you could absolutely do both. Like, they're not mutually exclusive from each other. Like, you can actually just have better financial boundaries to allow yourself to hit those goals. And I definitely can relate to the idea or the conversation around, like, almost like women out earning men and that uncomfortableness that comes with it. Because I feel like I've spoken about dating so much on the podcast recently, yeah. But I feel like when it comes to dating and, like, careers and, like, finances, because there is a disparity now when it comes to men and women, and a lot of women tend to be doing equal to men or maybe sometimes a bit better currently, well, definitely amongst my friends, there's this awkwardness to even actually be honest about the level that we are at, because you don't want to feel like you are emasculating them, or you don't want to be perceived as more masculine than you actually are, because actually having a level of independence shouldn't have to equate or suggest to others that you are now this masculine person who doesn't want to have a soft life, that wants to take out all the bins all the time, that wants to clean their car. And these are obviously very trivial things, but do you get what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. I remember watching something where this woman was like, she wants to be supportive of her husband and she's quite happy to have her husband be the head of the household. But if he doesn't match her, you know, it's this whole, I think she was referencing Ayanla Vaizan, what's her name?
You know, that lady.
That lady.
And so, like, I'm so sorry, because I actually really like her quotes. And I just can't remember her name. Mm-hmm.
And also Steve Harvey, who was like, oh, date the bus driver because the bus driver will love you, or date the man who's the garbage truck driver, whatever. And not to say that there's anything wrong with that, right? But why should I not? And I think this is something that is very unique to women, or the women that I have interacted with who are largely professional women, is that we want to date somebody who's our equal. We do. Mm. I don't want to be, you know,
having to baby your partner.
Not even having to baby my partner, but men will often say, I don't mind if my wife earns more than me, or I don't mind if my wife is more successful than me. But when it actually comes down to it, they are resentful of it and they want to put you down, or they want to find a way to have a one-up on you in order to maintain that sense of dominance and control. And I'm like, there are so many ways of asserting your dominance that doesn't involve putting somebody else down, because they might exceed you in another area. I myself am successful, right? Or I'd like to think of myself as successful and increasing in that. So I'm on that path. Took me a long time to get here, but I'm getting there. But that doesn't, you also know that I'm bad with finances. So I don't mind my partner potentially being better at finances and him taking the lead in that capacity and me taking my lead from him. And that in that way, he is the head of the household as it relates to our finances, even though I might need more money. You know what I mean? So I think men often, or let me not say men often because I don't want to speak for men, but women often feel like there's no winning. Like, I can't be successful, more successful than a man, but if I'm not successful enough, then I'm a burden, you know?
Yeah. And it's weird, because I was talking to, I think it was my mum the other day, and I was saying, women are praised for being married more than they're praised for having a successful career. Mm-hmm. Like, if you see a woman and she's married, you just assume automatically she's amazing, she's great, she's the best woman in bed, she's beautiful, she can raise a household, yeah? And if you see a woman who's at the top of her career or top of her game, it's like, but is she married? And it's always like, why is there this weird caveat? Why is there this weird comparison? And like, where I'm working now, I find it so inspiring, yeah? Because my boss is a bloke, but my boss's boss is a woman and her boss is a woman. So like, the top, top dogs are all women. And my boss's boss, let's call her Claire, yeah? When I look at Claire in the meeting, sometimes I'm not even listening because I'm just in awe, like, look at you. I know you're an active mom. I know you've got your kids that you look after, and you're at work just bossing it around, and you're you're doing it so organically and so lovely. And her motherly nature comes out at work because she's got like such a warm character and persona. And I'm like, we don't really see representation like that that much in terms of like a woman that can do both. It always kind of feels like you have to do one or the other. And we went out for like work drinks for them to welcome me in. No, it was a work lunch for them to welcome me in to the team. And she briefly spoke about her husband. And you could tell from the small insight she gave that her husband's also like a boss guy. And I was thinking, this is real goals. Like, you are clearly two people that just work as a team to climb the ladder and whatever ladder suits you, because they work in different industries. And I feel like sometimes when it's around, you know, the conversation around like careers and success and dating, is that we actually need to look at it better in terms of how are these two people going to operate as a team. So for example, if you was going to meet a guy who, using the example you gave before, was a bin driver, what do you call those people?
A garbage man.
Yeah. If they, for me, that would never be an issue for me as long as the person was ambitious. Do you get what I mean? Like, do you want to become the regional garbage collector of the area? Do you want to? No, for real. Because let me tell you something. I used to work at McDonald's, yeah. And in McDonald's, when you first start, you're on a minimum wage. I was earning £4.35 an hour, okay? And when my top McDonald's regional driver used to drive in, did I tell you the story the other day? I was telling this to someone the other day. You would see on the camera that it was his because his car had these very specific lights. So as soon as you saw the light flicker, ding, ding, you're like, yep, he's here. He would pull up in his bad boy new Range Rover, would have a suit that's done to the nines. And this guy owned like 5 McDonald's and literally didn't do nothing. But for him to have that position, he had to have started from the £4.35 position. But he clearly had ambition. Do you get what I mean?
You know why I disagree with that? And maybe this is showing up the disparity in our age. Is because at 40, I can't afford to...
No, Leanne. I'm not saying at 40 the man is earning £4.35 an hour, or even at 27 the man's earning £4.35 an hour, because in that instance I'd need to know, what are you doing prior to this? Did you recently change careers because you realized that actually it was more lucrative to work at McDonald's to climb the ladder than maybe before you was already in another senior role? There needs to be something that makes sense. But I'm not saying that, otherwise it's I'm perplexed. How did we get here? What have you been doing for this whole time? If that was my first job 10 years ago, what have you been doing for 10 years? I more just meant it as an example, as in like, that's me. The example was less about that specific job and that specific salary. And it was more about meeting someone and knowing that their heart posture is someone who's ambitious. Because I could meet someone who's a CEO, but actually they just got that job responsibility handed down in a family heirloom. When we're at home and it's lockdown, hypothetically, and I'm like working hard and in my boss mode era, they're going to be like, just chillax, just lay down. Let's watch a movie. Let's watch Netflix. Because they don't understand. They don't have that motivation. So it's like, yeah. You're who you are inside, I think sometimes is more important than like how it quantifies within a job.
Yeah, and I guess it's interesting because whereas the example that you gave about your boss, Claire, being like a boss babe and being inspirational, I think part of what is holding Black women back is not having the networks and the support systems to facilitate their growth. Like for me, I'm really happy that I work in a place where it's normal to breastfeed on a call. Like my boss, she has a childminder or whatever, she'll breastfeed and then she'll give the baby back to the childminder and continue about her business and nobody bats an eyelid. But I think when I think about those systems being set up for women more broadly in the context of womanhood or motherhood, I wonder what kind of systems are in place for Black women. So I'm one of 2 Black women in my entire company, right? And we're a small company, but I don't know that we have any formal systems in place to make sure that some of the things that might happen to me, like the microaggression on that call, or you know, the fact that I walk into rooms sometimes and people will question why I'm there. I went into a meeting, big PR company, one of the top PR companies in the world, and we're having a meeting with my boss, who is a white woman, but it was my project. And I always say to her that I'm always great, appreciative of the fact that she did this when we're in the call, but they literally assumed that I was her assistant and that I was there to take notes. And my boss was like, this is actually Leanne's project, so you're talking to me, but actually she's the one that you need to be talking to. And they were like, oh. And it gave, I guess it gave them the validation to then, you know, trust in me because this white woman had given my validation. And I know that so many women feel that way, you know, like 20% of Black women of 40,000 women, I think, said that they've experienced somebody assuming that they're not qualified, or 38% of Black women assume that walk into a meeting and they're assumed to be at a lower level than they actually are. And I think people think that we make these things up in our minds or that we're overly sensitive, but no, the systems genuinely are not in place to make sure that even when those things happen, because we can't control them, that there are support mechanisms in place for us to be able to deal with that and for the organization to deal with that accordingly. I don't know if that's ever happened to you in your spaces.
Well, I guess the overarching theme is the idea of being overlooked. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely experienced that. Like, I used to co-present a podcast, a news podcast, and I remember they were talking about being entered for awards, yeah? And me and my co-presenter just assumed, like, yeah, we're going to be entered for the award because we're, like, that you can win an award for, like, new presenter or new podcast of the year, best news podcast, all these different types of categories that we felt that we could fit into. Now, the award was for the British Podcast Awards, and that is something that I have been a judge for the past 2 or 3 years, yeah? So at the mm-hmm. point of this conversation, I am thinking it's a no-brainer that we're going to be submitted. And, like, the top dog basically was saying there's really strict budgets at the moment and we're not going to be submitted for the awards. And this was around the time that I was leaving the podcast anyway. So I kind of wanted to like say something, but I also felt like I didn't want to create a chaotic environment when I'm going to be leaving because it's not going to be fair on the team. But in like my final day, that was when we had a meeting with the top boss to discuss us not being entered. And he was basically like, you know, you would have been against these people and it's expensive to be submitted, so you probably wouldn't have been considered and all of this stuff. And I basically said to him in the meeting, I was like, do you know what the criteria are for the categories? And he was like, no. And I was like, okay, so I've actually been a judge for this specific category for the past 3 years. And I went through every single criteria. And I was like, what would you mark it out of five? And we kept going through. And at the end, I was like, so you can see that based on the criteria that you are unaware of, we would have had a strong chance of being pulled through. Secondly, mm-hmm. outside of that, because that's subjective to the group that we're in, yeah? Even if you didn't believe that, why at this point are you now saying you didn't think was at that certain standard? Why prior to this point had you not given us feedback if you felt so strongly that we wasn't at the level we should be at to be entered for competitions? And I remember at that day just thinking like, this is so counterproductive. We've created a Black news podcast to stand out, to give Black people a voice, you know, to create room for marginalized voices and groups. And actually, it just kind of made me feel like, was this whole project tokenistic? Because if it was something you was really passionate about, why was you not as invested as we were into getting that visibility at the awards? But yeah, all the other podcasts, just every single other podcast in the podcast unit was submitted.
And it's interesting because they didn't even know what the criteria was, right? And I feel like this happens a lot. It's like Black women and men are often placed in situations where they're expected to fail. Like they created this Black news podcast, but they didn't expect it to do as well as it did, right? So why even put you in a situation where it might not work out? Like why put yourself in a situation, where you're expected to fail? And it defeats the purpose because then they'll be able to say, well, we tried this Black news podcast and it didn't work, but did you put all the resources behind it? Did you give it an opportunity to be celebrated? Like,
yeah, it's a crazy one. But I definitely think the idea of being overlooked in the workplace or even bullied in the workplace actually is extremely, extremely common. But do you know what's really weird, yeah? Especially in regards to like this idea of race. I remember working in TV and this was when that whole thing happened around the H&M and the monkey on the t-shirt. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
So at the time, I was working in like development and short form content for online. And I remember I got pulled onto this special project and I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, they're choosing me, special project. And when we went to the project, I think the project was going to be called Let's Talk About Race or something like that. And essentially they wanted to have like a brand that was going to be reactive to when you kind of have those racial, they didn't use this word, but like outbursts, flare-ups, yeah? And they wanted like to maybe have explainers and things like that. And I remember they were using all these examples that I just personally wasn't offended by. And I think this for me was like my light bulb moment of when I realized that Black people really are not the same. They're not at all. Because I was the only Black person on the team, on this sub team. But somehow all the white people were more passionate and more offended by these racial offenses, in quotes, than I was. And I remember saying, like, guys, you've clearly brought me here because I'm Black, but I'm not fit for purpose on this team. Just because I'm Black and this is about race, it doesn't mean that this suits me, because you're talking about things and offences that I'm not offended by. So I have no value to add.
Also, why are you the only Black person, as if your voice would stand for everyone? I would make more sense to have a bunch of Black people ready to discuss the point.
The wider team was just me or someone else. She's mixed up. Still Black, but do you get what I mean? They just fought for the Blackest of them all. it's actually crazy.
When it comes to being judged, whether it's overlooked or undermined or all of the things that we've talked about, do you feel like it is more on the basis of your race or of your gender, or do you feel like it's simultaneously both? Because we often talk about the fact that Black women are receive kind of more discriminatory behavior because not only are we women, but we're also Black. So not only are we getting discrimination from white men, but also white women, potentially Black men.
I definitely think for me, and maybe my industry is what plays a part in this, but I think it's more race as opposed to being a woman. Because I work in a creative industry and I feel like creative industries on a whole are very, very diverse, which is why I can work in a company like I do where the top boss is a woman and the person under her is also a woman. That's not really like crazy. I feel like within the industry that I've worked in my entire career, there's always been women at the top or equally men at the top as well. But the difference has always been when it comes to race. So when I first started out in TV, and I only realized this years after the fact, but what I found to be really uncomfortable was the fact that I was so different from everybody else, and was the fact that you kind of needed like nepotism to get to the top. So it was a really weird kind of place to be in. So I definitely think it just in my experience, and probably largely to do with the industry I work in, I think it's more to do with race as opposed to gender, because I don't think there's that much disparity when it comes to gender.
I think the same for me. Like, I obviously work in the social justice sector, which is predominantly female-led. Mm-hmm. So I notice it more in accordance with my race rather than me being a woman. But when I'm in academic spaces, I feel both. Like, I remember my supervisor when I was doing my PhD said to me, and she was a white woman, she was like, do not get a young white woman to be your examiner because she will attempt to rip you to shreds. More so than a white man. Obviously, I've experienced other issues in academia with white men more specifically, also being told that I'm too attractive to be doing my doctorate. But like, when I went into my exam, I had a young white woman examiner. I also had a Black man, which was very helpful, who was from Jamaica. But that woman, she, a Viva exam, for people who don't know, usually lasts about like an hour and a half, right? Tops. That's like top end. I was in my exam for 3.5 hours, and it got to the point where I was like exhausted, on the verge of tears, and both the white male examiner and the Black male examiner from Jamaica was like, I think Leanne's had enough. We need to just let this go. And she's done what she needs to do. Like, you're actually doing way more than you need to. So I think, yeah, you're right. It does depend on the sector, but I've definitely felt the combination of my Blackness and my sex in more traditional sectors than others.
This is slightly like off topic, yeah. But do you know what I struggle with when it comes to the workplace? And I don't know if it's because I can somewhat tap into being quite introverted or what, but like there's this idea that to succeed in the workplace, especially in like corporate environments, you need to attend work drinks, you need to attend work events, okay? And I absolutely hate them. It freaks me out and I overthink so much. That's probably one of the only few places that my social anxiety really triggers the most, like currently. And I find it such a conflicting thing because it's like, I have to go to this environment and feel uncomfortable just for the sake of being liked or accepted in this company. And if I don't, I might be deemed as unsociable. I might be deemed as not a team player. I might be deemed as all these other variations that people can make up in their head. But that's something that really grinds me and really frustrates me. Because I think, especially when I moved jobs and I was just looking online on TikTok or reading different resources, that was something that kept coming up. When you go to a new job, make sure you go to every single work drink. Let me tell you a story. I wasn't even going to share this. But the other day we had work drinks and I was really scared to go. And I had a great time, actually. I didn't want to go. And I messaged my mom like, oh my gosh, my heart's beating out of my chest. And she was like, just go. And I went and I had the most amazing time because the people I work with are genuinely extremely lovely people. Like, I can't fault them. And then another time, more recently, we had another set of work drinks because someone was leaving. But I wasn't feeling well this day anyway. Like, I genuinely was really run down. I think I had a cold. And earlier on in the day, the girl who was leaving, let's call her Fiona, I said to Fiona, I probably won't be able to make your work drinks because I don't know why, but I only found out on the day anyway. And I feel sick, but let's go out for lunch instead and have lunch together. And if I can still make the drinks, I will. But if I can't make the drinks, I can't. So when the evening came, I saw my boss's boss, the one I was talking to about a minute ago, Claire. And she goes, so firstly, before I saw her, someone comes in and goes, laptop's down, it's time to go for drinks. And I was thinking, my laptop's down because I'm going to have to catch a train. And then Claire was like, Shan, you coming for drinks? And I was like, yeah. But in my head, I was like, I'm not. I can't. No. And then I started texting one of my friends, yeah. And I was like, what am I going to do? I need to leave. And no one was responding to me. I was like, I need to leave. And in the end, you know what I did? I just froze. I literally just froze and didn't move. And then I even saw Fiona and she was like, why are you still here? I thought you was going to go home. And I was like, I've spent the last half an hour deliberating whether I'm going to come and feel sick or if I'm going to go home. And she was like, Shan, just go home. I said, okay. And then I froze and then I hid until they left the building. Because that's how much it was freaking me out.
But this is the thing. And like, yes, I understand the value in work drinks because it builds camaraderie amongst the staff and it makes sure that everybody feels like a team and you get to know each other in a way that allows you to, it helps professionally to know who people are personally. And I get the fact that people need to know who you are in order for you to climb the ladder. But suppose I have six kids at home.
Leanne, why did you have to be six?
No.
Leanne said, suppose I have a llama and a giraffe in the garden.
But it's true. If I had six kids, my husband would not blink an eye in saying, guys, I have to get home to my wife and my six kids because my wife will take care of it and the nannies or whoever else I have help. But even with the six kids, and there's a book that I'm going to try and remember that talks about this, but even if I have the six kids, either I'll be excluded because everybody knows I have six kids and they're like, oh, Leanne's not going to be able to make it. She has all those kids at home. Or I genuinely won't be able to make it because I don't have the support either of my husband or my partner or my single parent to manage those six kids. So why can't we have like midday lunch meetup at work instead of post drinks? You know what I mean? Like where is the consideration for people and women more specifically, and even more specifically Black women who have things that prevent them from participating?
Even financially, like I'm so sorry. Sometimes work drinks, people are buying rounds. People are being nice and friendly. These aren't bad things, by the way. Oh, I wanted to get you a drink. Do you want this? And then now you're like, fuck. They did that to me the last three work drinks. Now it's my time. All they're going to think I'm just sponging off of them. But right now, I haven't got the money for that because I'm trying to pay my electricity bill. That's £120. Do you get what I mean? It's like, where is the commerce? Like, there's just so many of these expectations. And it's like, where's the budget for it? Like, baby. And also, what if I already have plans that evening? What if I want to switch off? Like, when we speak about, this is, more, again, more broadly, but the idea of being Black and in the workplace, especially when it's a corporate environment, yeah? Do you know what a lot of us do? We code switch. We code the fuck switch. Mm-hmm. So I've now come to work with my mask on, okay? The black mask, the white mask, rather, has been on for 8 hours. It was even on my commute to work for an hour and a half, and it's going to be on for my commute to work back. That's 12 hours something on my day, yeah?
So yeah, you cannot treat yourself.
Right. So when I want to go home now, listen to rap music in my headphones, listen to my gospel in my headphones, I can't even do that because I have to spend another 2 hours. These things are emotionally exhausting. They're emotionally taxing.
And you know what's funny? People always say, be yourself at work. Like, don't be afraid to show yourself up. Da-da-da-da-da. And I was watching this TikTok post by a guy called So Ambitious Dom. His name's Dominic. I can't remember what his TikTok name is, but we'll find it and share the TikTok. And he was like, number one rule, do not be yourself at work. Your work friends are not your real friends. Do not let them, especially in corporate, like my sector, I think it's a little bit different because we genuinely, who we are personally is part of how we carry out our work. But in the corporate setting, he was like, do not think that these people are your friends. Do not think that you're going to get along with them. Do not invite them to your wedding. Do not show them your real self because it will come back to bite you in the ass. So when you're emotional, I remember, I'll never forget, I was working in local authority in North London at this local authority. And I remember having a really bad mental health day. Like I was just in the pits. I went to work. I was on the train. Had to get off the train because I was having like an anxiety attack, but then I got in a cab and I went to work anyway. And I got to work and I was crying. Like I just couldn't stop crying. And so my boss was like, go home, take the day. It's fine. When I get my paycheck the following month and I realized that my pay has been docked, I went to them and I was like, what's up? Like you told me to go home. And bear in mind, I went home and I still worked, right? I just worked from home. He was just like, well, you know, you've missed a few days and, you know, we're concerned about your mental health. And I'm like, you do know that it's actually illegal to do this, right? Like you cannot dock my pay because I'm having a mental health issue, particularly not for one day. Like, and so as caring and considerate as people seem because they have to, when the opportunity arises to take that back from you, they will. And so that's, it's like, why should I? Yeah, why should I be myself?
I'm not going to lie. I've tried to be more open, though, about this idea with work friends, yeah? Because when I first started my career, I remember I made it very clear, like, you guys are not my friends. You're my work friends. And the reason why I said that is because I was like, when my birthday comes up, I don't want there to be confusion around things that I'm planning. When I have anything going on, I don't want there to be any confusions, okay? When I can't make commitments that are to do with your life, I don't want there to be any confusions. And when I left my last job, I genuinely left with friends, like real friends. As in the other day I went clubbing, wasn't clubbing actually, I'm lying. The other day I went out for my friend's 30th and my plus one for that event was a girl that I'd met at my previous job. And I was so excited to have that day with her because I was thinking about how much this girl got me through the like, what I was going through with my aunt, and she didn't even realize she was getting me through that, like just how kind she was, how much joy she brought me when I was going to the office. And I was like, these are the things that your real friends or your non-work friends would do, but they can't physically do because they don't work with you. And I just, it made me look at the value of work friends a bit differently. And obviously this particular person is Black, and before I was working in a predominantly Black team, so I guess naturally there's a sisterhood that you may develop that you may not in other places. But it genuinely made me just have a step back and think, Shan, when you first went into the corporate world, you never thought you would make work friends that would become real friends. And actually, you've made four solid work friends are now genuine friends that could come to my house. And you know how I'm funny about that. Yeah. But the other point I wanted to go back to was the idea about being yourself, yeah? And when I started this job, you have to do those introductory emails where you put like, "Hi, I'm Rashan. I'm so fucking great. That's why you hired me." And I remember doing that and thinking, you know, people are going to have a perception of me, maybe because I'm black. I don't know how diverse this team may be or how friendly everyone will be. Luckily, everyone's been extremely friendly. But I remember putting in the end of my, like the last final line was like, if you see me and I'm a bit quiet in the office, feel free to come and say hi because I'm a bit of an ambivert or something like that. And it was just so important for me to put that so that I could feel like I was seen, if that makes sense. Because, you know, we've kind of spoken about my personality a bit before, like in some situations or some environments, I may come across like quite loud and quite confident. And in others, I'm very insular. And like when I was starting this new job, I was thinking, fucking hell, they're gonna have to get to know me all over again in terms of that dynamic. Mm-hmm. And when you don't know someone and they can kind of flip between almost two extremes, it's like this person's being cold today and hot tomorrow, when actually it's not. This person's actually just not in an environment right now for whatever reason that makes them feel comfortable or safe to be expressive, or they're just not in the mood. They feel overstimulated or whatever it is. But I feel like sometimes, with the essence of not being ourselves, we kind of have to really be ourselves by like admitting that to make our experience and our journey a bit better. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I don't know what code switching looks like for you, but I notice for me, it's little things. It's not so much that I change who I am, but I might show different sides of myself. Like, as you said, sometimes you might be a little bit quieter. For me, I think the biggest thing is my accent. And my accent is really, I can't change it, right? But I do notice that my voice sounds slightly more American when I'm on calls with white people.
Leanne's at home like A-E-I-O-U. Yeah, let's start.
And it takes me a while to get to, I have to really have like a good relationship with my colleague if I'm going to just let my accent just like be free. And people generally like my accent, but it's just, it switches. Because when I remember going to university, I went to university in the States, and nobody understood what I was talking about. Like, nobody understood me. It's easier in the British context. But no, yeah, because I say water, just as an example. Like, can I have a glass of water? They were like, what? And I was just like, water. So no, you know, you have to say water. Like... Because it's a real barrier, particularly with Americans, more so Americans than Brits, to be honest, or English people. But there's different ways of code switching that allow you to still be yourself, but
yeah,
it still requires work and you still want to switch off when you get a chance to switch off. I was going to ask you actually, like, if you were the CEO of your own company, and you made all the rules, like complete fresh startup, which I guess actually is what we're doing, except we don't work in corporate. What are the types of support systems that you would want in place, or what are the types of things that you would want in place to make sure you could be your full self at work and still be productive and successful?
What systems would I put in place? For me personally, or like for my team?
A team.
So I would definitely, this is contrary to popular belief of what I've just said. I would definitely want there to be a regular social activity. Mm-hmm. But I would want it to be like, okay, the work day is 9 to 5, and it would never be 9 to 5, by the way. It would definitely be flexible working because I don't start work at 9 for anybody. But let's say if the work day was 9 to 5, I would make Fridays, or the last Friday of the month, would be 9 to 2. And then from 2 to 5, we will have like an activity in the office, or would go out to do an excursion, or we would have like, you know, some companies do like drinks on a Friday, or they do, you finish early on a Friday. I would make every last Friday of the month be something that's exciting. So maybe this month it's everyone finishes early, and you have to finish early no matter what, or the following week it might be we're all going to go to bowling. Do you get what I mean? But it's in work time rather than people's personal time. So I'd like to do that. I would love to have free lunch and snacks, because my current job has that, and I just think it's such a great incentive. Like when I'm going to work, I'm like, lunch is going to be banging today. I don't have to carry no food on the train. Nobody in the office has to tell me my food stinks because we're all eating the same food. It's fantastic here. I would love to have access to therapy, you know, not to force anyone, but if they want to go and have therapy, they can, and for free, and not just six sessions, because there's a lot of these employability assistant programs in the UK and they only give you six sessions, and that is not helping anybody. And then if I had anything else that I could do, I would have hybrid working. Yeah. Because I think when you work in an environment that's lovely, there actually is an incentive to, you know, coming into the office and being around those people. But I think equally, some people like me benefit from working from home. Oh no, my last thing would be, there'll be no rules on how you dress. Just come in. If you want to come in a tracksuit and a hoodie, come in a tracksuit on a hoodie.
Massive rider shorts and crop top.
Okay, we're not going to have over-sexualized outfits, because this is still a place for working, okay? But yeah, I think that's what I'd have. Is there anything you would add to that?
So I would add a mentoring system, because for me, I feel like, look, I love my colleagues, and I love particularly my boss. I love what she's been able to do, and I admire her for it. But I think her journey is obviously different from mine, right? And so I'm constantly seeking out a mentor. And actually, there's this woman who I would love to ask to be my mentor, but I'm so nervous to ask her.
Send her this podcast and say, listen from 45:17 to 46:17, and she'll get the hint.
And I just want to ask her, but I'm nervous. But if there was a facilitated program for that at work, understanding that I am, you know, one of two Black people, even though I'm a senior team member, I still need that support and that time with someone who's lived a life or traversed a career that I want to do the same with. You know what I mean? So I think I'd add that. Is there anything else that I would add?
I think mentoring's good though.
Yeah, the training, and attached to that are like training opportunities as well, which most workplaces have, right? And I would have mandatory, I don't want to call them DEI sessions because that feels like a little bit surface, but like mandatory sessions around like inclusivity and other topics that deeply affect Black women. In general, at all levels, because oftentimes we do it for like the bottom level, right? But we don't do it for like the CEOs and the top level. And actually, that's where most of the discriminatory behavior comes from, because they set the rules. And so, yeah, across the board. And for anyone who doesn't know, Sham and I also do those workshops. So if you need someone to talk to your CEOs or your companies about how to make Black women feel safer in their environments, just.
And they're fun.
And they're fun.
We're not getting at you. It's a safe space. It's lovely.
Because that's what we do. So I think, and there are organizations that do that, right? Like there are organizations, and we'll put them in our, not our caption, but our description, of organizations that you can seek, you know, women who are trying to become entrepreneurs or trying to become leaders, you can seek support from them. There are organizations that are trying to make sure that Black women have the opportunity to climb up the employment ladder or the career ladder, and we'll put those in the description for the episode. But it would be nice if those things were like baked into every organization, so that no matter where you went, you'd know that you'd be able to, you wouldn't have to worry about those things up front.
And I guess just to go full circle, yeah, in this idea around like hustle culture, and, you know, people always say that, I think people say Black women or women in general, we have to work like 10 times harder than other people to get to where we want to be. Yeah. Is that something that you ever internalized on your career journey or your career path? Did you ever think or consider the fact that you have to work harder, or you have to kind of do the most to be seen or to be recognized?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, you see it now with me where I struggle to say no. And the reason that I struggle to say no is that it, particularly in a professional setting, I mean, it's part of who I am generally, but within the context of a profession, I struggle with boundaries because I feel like if I put up the same boundaries as my white counterparts, I lose out on the opportunity to grow or to advance in my organization. And this is not specific to the organization I work in now. It's true across the board. My last job, I was getting paid jack shit. And because I was a woman and my boss was a man, I was like, if I don't work 10 times as hard and show myself to be the hardworking Black woman, then I'll never have an opportunity. So my skill set and the reason that I was hired is not enough. Like, whereas I know other people, not in my current workplace because everybody works super hard, but other people who definitely do the bare minimum and don't feel bad about it.
Can I say something on that note about finances? I was working, I'm not going to say where, as part of a team somewhere. And I might have mentioned it already on the podcast today. And someone was doing the exact same role as me, but they were a guy. Yeah. They were also Black, but they were a guy. And they were paid double the salary that I was. Double. And the only reason why I knew is because we were talking about money. And me and him are really close. And I used to always say, gift me. And one day he was like, are we not on the same salary? Or so, I can't remember how it came up, but it came up organically. And I realized that he was on, yeah, like double. Or if it wasn't double, it was significantly more. And I remember my bosses in this team that I was on were all white. The senior bosses, actually everyone was white, basically, other than us two. And so I went to the top boss to deal with it, and he was in the middle of moving jobs, like leaving the company, so he didn't really get to fix it or sort it out. And then my old boss, where I was working before, because it was in the same company, he was technically still my boss, like the top boss. I remember I went to him and he basically said to me, you should be grateful for this opportunity.
Wow.
You should just focus on the opportunity you were given. You were given a very good opportunity. Focus on that. And I remember thinking to myself, you think I'm an idiot. And then do you know what happened? Just to provide balance to the story, the new boss that came in at the new place, he asked me maybe like 6 months later, like, oh, Rashan, I heard about this. Did it ever get sorted? And I said, no. And you know what he did? He fought silently with HR, with all these people. He fought silently for me to get paid the correct amount. And then I ended up having to leave that job, not on any bad terms or anything like that. Right. And he made them give me all the money that was owed back in a lump sum payment.
Wow, that's amazing.
I'd gone back to my old team and he was still working behind the scenes. And one day he called me and was like, hi, Shan, just want to let you know that I've actually been dealing with this, even though you don't work here anymore. And this was the outcome. I hope you're happy. But he didn't say anything like, I hope you're happy. It was it was almost like he was happy on my behalf.
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking, see, look at this. I was a white man fighting my corner, not the Black man, the white man.
But it's true. So, I mean, I think the statistic is that Black women earn 39% less than white men, whereas white women earn 19% less than white men. And in Jamaica, there's this statistic that everybody likes to sprout where, oh, we have the most women managers of any country in the world and women are climbing the ladder, but they still get paid less. I think it's like 60% less or something, man, than men. So for all the people who are saying, oh, we have so many women managers, actually you're just creating more workhorses that you're not paying enough. Like, so yeah, I mean, it's a struggle. Every day is a struggle. I feel like now we need to have Rick Ross's Every Day I'm Hustling kind of come
every
in.
Every day I'm hustling, every day I'm, I don't want the copyright, so this is what we got. Hey, yeah.
But yeah, no, I hope other women who are listening to this recognize that they're not the only ones and it's not just you, like you're not going crazy. These things are happening and they are wrong and they're happening to many of us. And, you know, hopefully the collective struggle will shift sooner than later.
Thanks for listening, guys. Until next week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.